Is Tyree Wilson the perfect project for the Falcons to take in round one? And could the team circle back to pursue Lamar Jackson later this offseason? It's Mock Draft Monday, guys. Let's get it.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, a.k.a. Mr. Drew, a.k.a. Sirius Black, and your very humble host, Maine, here on this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family, your team every day. And I want to thank everyone that makes Locked On Falcons their first listen each and every day. Of course, it's free and available Monday through Friday on a variety of podcast platforms, including on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube and you will get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. And make sure you check us out on your Roku and Amazon Fire TV by downloading the Locked On Sports Atlanta app on Roku and Amazon Fire TV. So it is Mock Draft Monday. It is also a Mailbag Monday. We'll answer a couple of listener questions, including whether or not the Falcons could revisit Lamar Jackson, not only at a future date this offseason, but perhaps next year. But let's get into the Mock Draft Monday portion of today's episode, where we examine a recent mock draft to really look at a prospect that the Falcons are projected to take in round one and take a deep dive on that guy. And this mock draft comes from Dane Brugler of The Athletic. He did a top 10 mock on Friday after the Panthers traded up with the Bears for that number one overall pick.
The eighth pick, the Atlanta Falcons select
Tyree Wilson, defensive end from Texas Tech University. And the thing you like about Tyree Wilson, he's a long, lanky, explosive pass rusher in terms of a guy that gets off the bus looking very, very promising. 6'6", 271 pounds, 35 5/8 inch arms. That's 96th percentile among pass rushers, according to mockdraftable.com. Didn't get an official listing of his wingspan, but it's projected at over 86 inches, which, according to Mock Draftable's database, that would make him basically the fourth in the top four among all players in terms of overall wingspans, as they only have three guys currently that have 86 or longer arms in terms of wingspan. And the thing that stands out about Wilson when you pop on the film is he has very heavy hands. And what that means is, you know, he is going to move guys off the ball, especially when he's rushing on the interior against guards. His bull rush is going to get movement every single time. And he has the tools to develop other moves, but he isn't quite there yet. And we'll circle back to that a little bit later when we talk about some of the concerns with Wilson. But he has the ability to line up on a multitude of areas on your defensive line. He can play on the edge. He can play inside. He can play that five technique role. And especially for a team like the Falcons, who supposedly want to continue to play with these hybrid fronts, that versatility is going to be very valuable. When the Falcons go to their 4-3 looks, he can play on the edge. On rundowns, he can kick inside on passing situations. If they want to play 3-4, he can play that five technique role for a traditional defensive end. And so there is a scenario where you can get him, as well as several of the other Falcons top players like Grady Jarrett, like Taquan Graham, Arnold Ebiketie, and Lorenzo Carter all on the field at the same time. Hopefully we'll be seeing the Falcons add to that group over the next couple of days and weeks to see who their top pass rushers. But certainly I think Wilson, regardless of where you want to, he can kind of be that movable chess piece, and you can kind of fit him in where you need to fit him in. And again, 6'6", 271, 35 5/8 inch arms. We've seen a lot of guys getting off the bus that are this type of size that go very early in the draft. You look at several number one overall picks: Trevon Walker, Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney. All these guys were 6'4 or taller. Clowney was 266. Walker and Garrett were 272. They both had over 35 inch arms. Clowney was 34 and a half. You had Ziggy Ansah, very similar size to both Walker and Garrett, 6'5, 271, over 35 inch arms. He was the fifth overall draft selection. Alden Smith was number seven overall, 6'4, 263, over 35 inch arms. Chandler Jones, 21st overall several years ago, 6'5, 266, over 35 and a inch arms. And then you have Emmanuel Ogbah, who's number 32 overall, the first pick in round two, 6'4, 273, with over 35 and a half inch arms. And so the point is that these are the types of pass rushers that often get highly coveted in the draft. And so when Daniel Jeremiah of NFL.com a few weeks back sort of discuss how some teams have Tyree Wilson rated over Will Anderson and then proceeded to mock Wilson in a mock draft to Arizona at the number three overall selection and Will Anderson out of Alabama, number five overall to the Seattle Seahawks in his mock draft. That caused a mini uproar on the internet, but it kind of made sense to me, not saying that I would personally rate Wilson over Anderson, but it makes sense. And as a DJ later explained, if you value traits, if you value upside, it's a similar conversation that led to Trayvon Walker leapfrogging more polished pass rushers like Aiden Hutchinson last year and Kayvon Thibodeau last year. If you believe in Wilson, you know, being a relatively raw player and believing that, you know, his future in the NFL is going to be a lot brighter than what you saw at the collegiate level, it makes sense. And this is something that we discussed over the weekend on the Discord, doing one of our Saturday symposiums, which is basically a Twitter space for the Discord this past weekend. And I kind of jokingly, you know, I like to be a little spicy with some of these takes. I called Will Anderson a fraud, and I don't necessarily mean that. You know, I got to be spicy when I say stuff. But I went back and charted Will Anderson's production this past year, and a lot of his production this year as well as last year came on unblocked plays, cleanup plays, stunts plays, right? You know, of his 10 sacks, I only charted six of them where he actually beat an offensive lineman that weren't unblocked, weren't cleanup plays, weren't stunt plays. I charted six other quarterback hits that he had. Only one of them saw him beat an offensive lineman. And so one of the things I do want to do at a later date, probably when we get closer to the draft, is go through some of these top edge rushers and chart, you know, how they got their production in terms of sacks, hits, TFLs, how they won, where they won, all that stuff and more. But my guess is that Wilson probably had a higher percentage where he was actually beating offensive linemen to get his production as opposed to Will Anderson. And then you look at the PFF metrics, you know, and Daniel Jeremiah kind of touched upon this, that, you know, with a player like Walker, who was much, much lower in terms of his production, that's not an issue with Tyree Wilson, right? You look at PFF's pass rush productivity metric, which is basically their per snap pressure sort of breakdown, and you compare Wilson to the other nine edge rushers that are in Daniel Jeremiah's top 50 rankings as of this recording. And of those guys, Wilson had the second highest pass rush productivity among those guys, only behind Georgia's Nolan Smith. And then you look at his win rate was the second highest behind Nolan Smith, but his pass rush productivity on a per snap basis was actually the highest of that 10 edge rusher group. And then when you look at true pass rushing downs or true pass set downs, right, where PFF basically takes out screens, the rollouts, play action, they take off like three-man rushes, they take off plays that have less than 2 seconds of time to throw or more than 4 seconds. So when the quarterback, you know, holds onto the ball too long, and you look at those situations, Tyree Wilson's pass rush productivity was third among these 10 edges, behind only Will McDonald of Iowa State and Lucas Van Ness of Iowa. And it was second behind McDonald in terms of these true pass rush downs in terms of win rate in those situations. And so the point is that he's basically more productive, if you buy into the PFF metrics, than Will Anderson across the board. Now, I think you can easily argue, and I probably would also argue this, that some of that is owed to going up against SEC offensive linemen versus Big 12 offensive linemen. But the idea that some teams out there, again, not me, but other teams out there might value Wilson a little bit more than Anderson is not crazy to me, especially if you're a team like we assume the Falcons are going to be. And again, not suggesting the Falcons would value Wilson over Anderson, but maybe, you never know. And, you know, if you're a team that wants to play with lighter boxes, which is kind of the new thing in the NFL, where teams are sort of designing their defensive scheme to stop the pass and not necessarily loading up against the run like we have traditionally seen defenses do throughout NFL history, you know, where it's stop the run first and pass second, you know, nowadays, this is why the Fangio defense has sort of taken the league by storm. It's much more geared towards let's stop the pass first and stop the run second. And that leads to playing with lighter boxes. You need bigger guys to kind of compensate for the fact that you're not going to have the numbers count in the box. And so a 271-pound Wilson is probably going to be a lot more intriguing to you if you want to play that style of defense than a 253-pound Anderson. So we are going to continue talking a little bit about Wilson and some of the concerns, despite the tools that he has, and sort of discuss sort of how long it's going to take for him to impact in the league, that if he's a bit of a project, that may take a little bit longer for him to potentially develop. But guys, before we get there, I want to tell you that today's episode is brought to you by the Ultimate Football GM. You've heard me talk about this fun new mobile game. And as the Falcons are gearing up to make their moves later this week, you can make your own moves, build your own dynasty, manage every strategic aspect of your team, hiring coaches, coordinators, make trades, go through free agency, the draft, and every up and down in the season. This is all in a challenging and realistic game world. Ultimate Football GM is completely free. It's playable offline, so you can play on the go as you want, when you want. I put the game down for a couple of weeks now. I've started to pick it back up to get geared up for the next couple of days to get my sort of fix in terms of being that GM or manager. And the thing about this game, I can attest why I put it down, because I was so frustrated with how challenging the game. It took me several years just to have a winning season. It took me several years to make the playoffs. I was trying to do the let me build my team up first and then go get the quarterback. But, you know, I had to sort of switch that up to go get the quarterback. And that kind of applies to what the Falcons are going on. So if you want to have your fun, go on and check out this game and make sure you use the promo code Locked On, all in caps, LOCKEDON, in the game store, and you'll get 100% free boost. And if you want to download the game, just go to ultimate-gm.com or look it up in the app stores. That's ultimate-gm.com, Ultimate Football GM. Start your dynasty today. So I definitely can envision a scenario where the Falcons are taking Tyree Wilson in round one. We've been talking for like basically the last 6 weeks about the idea of the Falcons going corner at eight. But I think in a world, especially in a world where the Falcons don't necessarily hit that upgrade in free agency at edge, that they might be more attracted to a player like Wilson at the top of the draft. Especially, you know, you wonder if the Falcons going to be, you know, pursuing edge rushers this offseason now that they've re-signed Lorenzo Carter. That may suggest that the Falcons aren't necessarily expecting to get that big upgrade at edge. Players like Marcus Davenport, players like Jadeveon Clowney that we've discussed. Obviously, Davenport has that Ryan Nielsen connection. Clowney kind of has a Nielsen connection because the Saints were very heavily pursuing Clowney ahead of the 2020 season before he ultimately chose to sign with the Browns. But I think in terms of that type of player, this big, long player, Wilson sort of fits that mold that we've seen the Saints very attracted to with guys like Cam Jordan as well over the years. And Wilson is just bigger, longer than even Clowney, Davenport, and even Cam Jordan at this point in time. But I do think that doesn't necessarily mean that Wilson is a slam dunk, right? The knocks on Wilson is, despite his long length and lankiness, you know, lanky is the right word, because he kind of is a little bit out of control at times. There's too often where he kind of gets off balance. He spends a little bit too much time on the ground than you necessarily would want to see in a pass rusher. Obviously, you're not going to be able to sack the quarterback if you're, you know, lying prone on the turf. And it'll be interesting to go back and chart his production later this offseason, because I didn't see too many opportunities and too many reps where he was able to win on the outside. I went back and watched some film earlier today before recording this to kind of refresh my memory on Wilson. I did not see that many times where he was able to go up against a tackle and beat that guy to the outside. I think he does have good bend for a player his size. I think he has the speed and burst to win on the outside, but he just doesn't consistently do it. And I think some of that is owed to, I don't know if he really has the refined footwork or the hand placement and technique to really comfortably bend the edge. And I think often he's laid off the snap, and that's also holding him back in terms of being able to be that speed rusher on the outside. So I think while Wilson has the tools, he is fairly raw, and that is a concern, because you do wonder how quickly he's going to produce in the NFL. When you compare him to some of these other guys like a Myles Garrett, a Chandler Jones, an Alden Smith, Ziggy Ansah, Jadeveon Clowney, Emmanuel Ogba, you know, some of these guys were very productive right away in the NFL. Garrett, Chandler Jones, Alden Smith were very productive. Ziggy Ansah was very productive as well before injuries kind of sapped him. And Ansah was a guy that kind of just relied solely on those raw tools from the jump in the NFL. And I can recall specifically that London game against the Lions in 2014, where he gave Jake Matthews that work just basically because he's just bigger, longer, stronger than that. But notably among this group, Clowney and Agba kind of got off to a relatively slow starts, right? And that's notable to me because of this group of players, Clowney and Agba had the slowest three cones. We've talked a little bit about the correlation between pass rush production, particularly looking at sack production in the three cone, right? The lower that three cone, the faster that three cone is, the higher that sack production tends to be among edge rushers in the NFL. Now, Myles Garrett didn't run a three cone. You know, Trayvon Walker also had an incredible three cone, but it's a little too early to judge him. But notably of this group of players, Chandler Jones that we're talking about had the fastest three cone, and he was the most productive player right away in the NFL. If you look at his first 4 years of production in the NFL and sort of extrapolate his pressures and sacks on a 16 game basis, right? He averaged about 10 and a half sacks and 59 pressures per 16 games over the first four seasons of his NFL career. And you compare that to Clowney and Agba, who are at the bottom of this list of these players that were comparing Wilson to. Clowney averaged 6.8 sacks and 50 pressures over his first 4 years per 16 games. Agba was 5.8 sacks and 40 pressures over the first 4 years of his NFL career. And I wonder if Wilson, when we project him, where does he kind of fit in? And so comparing him to these other guys in terms of the frame and body type, I want to compare him to him those athletically. So I'm very much looking forward to his pro day at the end of the month. It's scheduled at Texas Tech at March 29th. And so I really want to, you know, I expect him to run fast. I expect him to be explosive in his jumps. I'm very curious to see what his agilities are. Does he have that high end agility, or is he on the lower end of that? I expect him to test better than probably a lot of people would think in that regard. But, you know, when you examine Clowney and Agba specifically, and I look at Wilson, I wonder the rawness, is he more comparable to a Clowney or an Agba than he is to a Chandler Jones or Myles Garrett or somebody like that? But we know Clowney's issues early in his career were injury related. Clowney's always been, you know, a number two. He's a high-end number two pass rusher. He's never really proven himself despite all the hype he had coming into the NFL to be that number one guy. He's had 1 year where he was kind of the guy, and that was a year where J.J. Watt was injured. I think it was 2017, if I'm not mistaken, where Clowney had 9.5 sacks that year and 64 pressures. But then all of his other seasons, all two of them, where he's had 8 or more sacks and 50 plus pressures, he was either the number two guy to J.J. Watt or the number two guy to Myles Garrett. And Agba is a notable player because he got off to a slow start, kind of bounced around the league a couple of years with Cleveland and Kansas City, then had his breakout year in Miami back in 2020. That was year 5 for Emmanuel Agba, had 9 sacks, 66 pressures, followed that up with another 9 sack season in 2021 and 61 pressures. And I think, you know, Agba's notable because he also, of this group of players that we're talking about, my recollection is that he probably spent a large chunk of his early career rushing on the interior, similar to what we're talking about with Wilson, where that may be where he puts his best foot forward before you can develop some of that outside pass rush. And so I wonder a little bit if he's more comparable to Agba. Agba's notable because he's not the most explosive guy when it comes to rushing on the outside, but he wins with length, power, and he has a really nice cross chop that he used. And I think the fact that he took him a while to develop that sort of technical pass rush move like a cross chop is why it took him so long to develop in the NFL, because he doesn't necessarily have the plus-plus traits. You know, he has plus traits, but not plus-plus traits to sort of just win with natural ability like a Ziggy Ansah, that type of player. And so it takes a while to develop those moves and that technical things. And I wonder if Wilson's going to be on that track. I think he's probably got a little bit more of the plus-plus athletic traits. And again, that's where the pro day test is going to kind of inform us on that, but he may take a little bit while to develop, and it may be year 4, year 5. He may be one of these guys similar to what we're talking about with Marcus Davenport, where you're kind of hoping his second team is going to be a lot more productive than necessarily his first team. Although, again, Davenport's production is a little bit better than both Clowney and Agba on a per 16 game basis over the first 4 years, averaging about 7 sacks and 52 pressures compared to those two. So a little bit better than that. And so we'll see sort of where Wilson kind of slots in on that, but there's a lot of boom bust potential with Tyree Wilson. And so it's understandable why I think a lot of people may look at him and be like, you know, I don't know about that guy. But I think with the Falcons, it's specifically because of the presence of Ryan Nielsen, because of your, whether you trust him or not, or whether he's earned that trust or not, but at least his reputation as a developer of, you know, pass rushers, you feel maybe a little bit better about, you know, betting on the upside of a Tyree Wilson compared to in the past when the Falcons have bet on these types of more athletic, toolsy pass rushers in the past. And, you know, I think Wilson, you know, you're comparing him to like Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley are the players I'm referencing, but those guys were like 6'2", sub 250 pass rushers. It's different when you're 6'6", 270 plus. So I do feel like, you know, while I wouldn't necessarily, like, I wouldn't sit here and say, hey, Wilson's a home run. Again, it's boom bust. Like, he could be Emmanuel Ogba, he could be Jadeveon Clowney, or he could be, you know, Ziggy Ansah, I won't say Chandler Jones, but, like, you know, that type of impact player. But betting on the boom with Ryan Nielsen, I think, makes sense for the Falcons. So he makes a ton of sense for the Falcons. We will leave the mock draft portion of today's episode and move on to the mailbag, which is going to involve us talking about whether or not the Falcons will circle back to Lamar Jackson, and we'll get into a little bit of a conversation of part of the reason why I am not panicking about the future of the Falcons quarterback situation that is related to that. And we'll get into that as we continue today's episode. But it is beyond the midway point of the NBA season, which is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sports book. New customers get a no sweat first bet up to $1,000. That means if your first bet doesn't win, you get bonus bets back in up to $1,000. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, super easy to use. You can bet, you know, on the NBA point spreads, money lines. You can build yourself a parlay based off of rebounds, assists, and points and whatnot. I like looking at the prop bets for the NFL draft to see how those things are changing. You know, I already got money on like Will Levis being the number one overall pick. I probably need to put some money on CJ Stroud being that number one pick, all that and more. So go check it out. Whatever you want to bet on, NBA, NFL, et cetera, XFL, use that no sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/locked on. That's FanDuel.com/locked on. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. So let's get into a quick couple of mailbag questions before we get into that Lamar Jackson conversation. And first comes from L in the Discord. He says, do you think Kendre Miller, the running back from TCU, would make a good pairing with Tyler Allgeier? Yeah, I like Miller. He's more of that slasher than Allgeier, but does have enough sort of speed and power to kind of be a solid 1-2 punch. Rise Up from the Discord asks, hey, Aaron, would love to hear your top three for every position in this upcoming draft. Thanks. Well, Rise Up, sorry to disappoint you, but that's probably more of an April question. I'm not quite ready to do that. So we'll punt that to maybe a month from now. Then we have an email from AJ. He says Adam Thielen is not the burner we look for as a wide receiver too, but I still think he would be a good fit since he's a willing blocker while being a good route runner. Worst case is he's another good veteran to teach guys like London and Pitts. And yeah, I think if you're looking for veteran leadership, Thielen would be a good guy for that. But Thielen's kind of a declining player. You know, I hate to say use the term washed, but looking at some of his production, especially in the second half of the year, he looked a little bit washed because he was kind of the number four guy in Minnesota's offense, especially after they made the TJ Hockenson trade, that he was actually behind KJ Osborne in terms of production over those last like 9-10 games of the season. He's going to be 33 in August. This year he was healthy. He played every game, but the previous years he was dealing with a lot of injuries there. So if you're going to sign Adam Thielen, I don't think you're signing him to be a number two. I think you're really signing him to be a number three at this point in time. So in a world where the Falcons don't re-sign Alameda Zaccheaus, I think, you know, Thielen might be worth visiting there. But in this point in time, I think if you're expecting him to be more than like a number three wide receiver and probably a fourth option in your passing attack, you may be a little bit disappointed with what Adam Thielen is going to bring to the table. So let's get into our final question. This comes from Sandox. What's the likelihood of Lamar not coming to terms with a few teams that can fulfill his contract or Baltimore? And we revisit the situation in the 2024 offseason. I feel like this team should be a lot more complete this time next year. So, yeah, the Lamar situation is very interesting because it's a process that could play out over the course of several months, if not years, as you're intimating, Sandox. You know, hypothetically, and we stress the word hypothetically, right? You know, a team like the Atlanta Falcons could circle back to pursuing Lamar Jackson at a later date, despite sort of the initial indications being that, you know, they won't pursue him at this time. And I think part of that is just logistical, where teams can't contact. I think we just learned over the weekend that, you know, teams can't really contact a franchise tag player like Lamar Jackson until the start of the year on Wednesday, on March 15th, because prior to that, that would probably be considered tampering. Again, I don't know exactly the rules, but that's my guess. And so, had, you know, teams like the Falcons said, oh, we are 100% interested in Lamar Jackson, that would have been considering tampering. So that may be a factor on why teams said no. Another factor is teams in general don't like have to deal with offer sheets, right? And for those unfamiliar with what I'm talking about, because Lamar Jackson was franchise tagged with the non-exclusive tag, another team could come around and sign him to an offer sheet, basically sign him to a new contract. Let's say, hypothetically, you know, a team like the Falcons sign him to a four-year, $200 million fully guaranteed contract, and Baltimore would then have 5 days to match that contract. And if they were to match him, it's essentially Baltimore signing him to a four-year, $200 million contract. And if they don't match it, they would get two first round picks back from the Falcons. And it, for a team like the Falcons, why would they be interested in doing that? Because they would basically do all that work for nothing, negotiating the deal for the Ravens. And it seems like a lot of people, because of the expectation that Lamar wants a fully guaranteed contract, and if a team was successful at, you know, negotiating a contract for less than a fully guaranteed deal, Baltimore is expected to match that deal. And so I think that's leading to some of the stalemate that's going on right now. And this is also a factor in why you do not see restricted free agency being a significant thing in any offseason. Like if you go to the Wikipedia page of restricted free agent, you know, all the examples they use are from like 15 years ago. And like, I can't think of the last time a restricted free agent changed teams. I'm sure there's been one or two examples in the last decade or so, but it doesn't happen very often. And that's a testament to why, you know, teams aren't necessarily chomping at the bit to go out there and offer an offer sheet, because restricted free agent, like unlike unrestricted free agent, is you have to do the similar thing where you offer an offer sheet. If the player agrees and the original team doesn't match, then you get, you know, potentially draft pick compensation, not two first round picks, usually a second or third or whatever. But you know, the other factor that's holding back teams from going after Lamar is the notion that there's a 5-day waiting period, and it kind of puts all of your free agency on hold during that 5 days, right? Because you can't necessarily proceed until I think that contract gets approved. And if you're a team like the Falcons and you want to go out there in the first couple of days of free agency and sign a bunch of players, hopefully, you know, that's not necessarily something that you're going to be rushing in to do with the Lamar Jackson situation and put the rest of your free agent haul on hold. And, you know, in a world where you do go after Lamar and you don't secure him, then Baltimore matches that offer sheet, the optics aren't great for that, right? Now, I don't think that's a massive issue, but it's going to be tough to be all in on Lamar Jackson, you know, strike out on getting him and then basically turning back to your locker room and be like, yeah, you know, we believe in you, Desmond Ridder, or we believe in you, other quarterback, despite the fact that we basically were willing to pay a bajillion dollars to Lamar Jackson. And again, I don't think that's a huge issue or a huge deterrent for that, but it's just, it's an awkward situation is basically. And so I don't think teams to avoid that awkwardness are going to rush into that situation. But I think hypothetically, you know, if you were a team like the Falcons that were eventually going to make a move for Lamar Jackson, you would probably wait until late March or early April to do so. Now, personally, I don't think that a team like the Falcons would wait until after the draft to pursue Lamar, because I just don't think, you know, that's a plan B situation, right? Why would you wait till after the draft to get your plan A at quarterback? And I don't think Lamar Jackson is anybody's plan B. He's either your plan A or you're not a plan at all, right? He's not like, well, you know, we struck out on these other two or three quarterbacks and now I guess we can just go get Lamar Jackson. Like, that's not how it works, right? So, you know, but it is possible for a team to wait until after the draft. You know, because I, from what I understand, up until July 17th, another team could come and offer an offer sheet for Lamar Jackson at any point between now and July 17th, or any point between Wednesday, March 15th and July 17th, and as well as possibly trade for Lamar Jackson. Like, it doesn't, you're not guaranteed that you have to sign him to an offer sheet. You could negotiate a trade with Baltimore, which I assume you would have probably wind up giving up more than two first round picks in order for that to happen. But, you know, that's going to be a complicating factor. Another complicating factor is whether or not Lamar's going to play this year, right? You know, there's been a lot of speculation that he's not going to play on the tag. I would understand if he chose not to do that. But if, you know, again, if Lamar's looking for advice from some random dude on the internet, I would recommend him to play on the tag. You know, just wait. You know, you don't have to sign your offer sheet until, you know, training camp or whatever. But, you know, you get a fully guaranteed contract this year. And then you play this game again next year, right? And if your goal is to find that fully guaranteed contract, as has been widely reported, just play the waiting game. Lamar Jackson, right? You know, basically when we look at the history of the NFL, the quarterbacks or the players, because there's only been two quarterbacks that have been successfully able to get a fully guaranteed contract, was Kirk Cousins and Deshaun Watson. And both of these guys, you know, were able to do that because they were able to get into a bidding war. They were able to force a bidding war. And Kirk Cousins played this game before where he was tagged multiple times and then the Washington team couldn't Commanders couldn't tag him a third time, and he hit unrestricted free agency and therefore was able to get that fully guaranteed deal from the Vikings a couple of years ago. And so if you're Lamar, just play the waiting game. Just keep playing on the tag until Baltimore financially cannot tag you any longer, and then you'll be an unrestricted free agent, and then you can get your deal, and that may be 2 years from now, because this year he's going to play on the tag. Next year, if they were to tag him again, you know, it'll be, I think, about $39 million, which is probably doable. But then the following year, that would jump to, I think, $56 million, which may be doable, but it's borderline at that point in time. And so I think with Lamar, it's just patience, right? I'll play on a tag. I'll get my $32 million guaranteed. I'll get my $39 guaranteed next year. And then eventually I will be able to, quote unquote, get free and get that fully guaranteed contract once I can get to unrestricted free agency. So I do think there is definitely a scenario, as you put out, Sandox, where the Falcons can go back and circle back to this Lamar situation next year, where they presumably have a better roster moving forward. And I think there'll be plenty of options potentially next year that may be available for a team like the Falcons if they choose to go and try to upgrade the quarterback position with a more proven option. You have guys like Lamar Jackson. I don't know if Trey Lance is going to be a more proven option, but he may be available on the market next year. Kyler Murray may be available via trade next year. Russell Wilson may be available via trade. Ryan Tannehill could be available as well. And I think this speaks to what I've discussed a couple of times on the podcast, that this quarterback carousel that we've seen the last couple of offseasons, I think this is going to be the new normal in the NFL for several years now, guys. And that's why I don't think the panic that a lot of Falcon fans have with, we got to get the quarterback right now, I personally think that's a little bit overblown, because I think there will be more opportunities in the future than you would normally assume, given the value of the quarterback position. Right. And I feel like we've been moving in this direction for several years now, where you've seen teams paying these premium for these quarterbacks. And I think teams are going to be less willing to do that. I think this is kind of going to be the direction and trajectory of the NFL, that basically, if you don't have one of these top five quarterbacks like a Patrick Mahomes, presumably a Joe Burrow, that is going to allow you to be a championship contender year after year. I don't know if teams are going to value playing the premium for guys that are below that tier moving forward, right? You look at this, it's a similar situation that we discussed many times in the past with Matt Ryan, where we were paying a premium for Matt Ryan, and it wasn't because Matt Ryan was the problem. But I also talked about it, well, Matt Ryan isn't the solution. And that's what I mean, where, like, if we're paying a premium, we want our quarterback to solve the problem, which presumably talking about being a team that can be a perennial playoff team, being a team that can be perennial championship contender. And it's the notion I also brought up, which is like, why are you paying for cable if you're not watching cable? Right. So why are you paying a premium for a quarterback if you're not getting premium quarterback production and getting the corresponding team success that you expect in that? And again, I think this has been a movement that's been picking up more and more steam the last couple of years. But because we are stuck in this past mindset of, oh, well, you got to have a top 10, top 12 quarterback, you know, I don't think that's going to be the new normal in the NFL. And you've seen this for several years, where teams are dumping expensive quarterbacks, right? You're seeing it this offseason. You've seen it recent offseasons. You know, Aaron Rodgers, Derek Carr are guys that are going to be moved on for potentially guys on rookie contracts this year in Green Bay and Las Vegas, you know, with signings with Daniel Jones and Geno Smith. Those are basically 1 or 2 year contracts. These long-term deals that teams are going to have no more. Kirk Cousins is another guy that probably will be potentially moved on. But you go back to the past, Matt Ryan, the Falcons moved on for him, replaced him with a cheap veteran in Marcus Mariota and a guy on a rookie contract in Desmond Ridder. Carson Wentz, replaced by a guy on a rookie contract in Jalen Hurts. Jimmy Garoppolo, potentially replaced by a guy like Trey Lance or Brock Purdy on a rookie contract. Joe Flacco, replaced by Lamar Jackson on a rookie contract. Phillip Rivers, replaced by Justin Herbert on a rookie contract. And while, you know, Flacco, Rivers, and Ryan were sort of the old school guys, so it took a couple of years of them losing before the Ravens, the Falcons, and the Chargers looked to move on. But basically, Carson Wentz had Philly had one down year, one losing season, and then he was out the door. Jimmy Garoppolo, one losing season in San Francisco, and they were trading up for Trey Lance and all that sort of stuff. And so basically, again, if you're not going to be a perennial playoff team, if your ceiling, or if you're a team that's like, we are a playoff team, but our ceiling is the first or second round of the playoffs, like say the Vikings are with Kirk Cousins, I think those teams are going to be more and more looking to move on and replace their really expensive $35, $45, $55 million quarterbacks with guys on rookie contracts. Because again, if you're not watching cable, why are you paying for cable? Right? Cut the cord. I think that's going to be the new normal in the NFL. And that's part of the reason why I'm not necessarily panicking about the future of the Falcons quarterback position, because in the future where we do have to go out there and make that move to get that guy that can get us in the postseason success. If Desmond Ridder can't be the guy that can get us into the postseason, well, we'll be able to find a veteran stopgap option that we can rent for a year or two to get us into the postseason before we go back to making the switch to a good quarterback on a rookie contract or that sort of thing. So, you know, to me, my big question with Lamar is not, hey, you know, are you a quarterback that can get a team on perennial playoff contention? I think Lamar has proven without a doubt that he will get you in playoff contention. My one question with Lamar is he the type of quarterback that can get you consistently past the first and second round of the playoffs, right? And so therefore, that's the question with paying him the premium. You know, are you going to be paying him, you know, $50 million plus dollars, and you're basically your ceiling is the second round of the playoffs? But, you know, we're not going to get into that on today's episode, but we'll wrap up here. You know, I feel like when we talk about the Falcons situation, and you touched upon the Sandhawks, the Falcons from the jump, right? Arthur Smith, Terry Fontenot have from the jump been talking about, we want to improve the roster first and then worry about the quarterback later. And I think it's understandable why so many people poke holes in that type of strategy, because like any strategy in the NFL, you can poke holes in pretty much. There's no sort of tried and true, one true blueprint to team success. But I do think a year from now, where you presumably hope that the Falcons have a stronger core, circling back and revisiting the quarterback conversation, such as pursuing Lamar Jackson, does make a lot more sense. So that's part of the reason why I am not necessarily panicking about, oh no, the Falcons have to get the quarterback this offseason or else everything, you know, is going to fall apart. I just don't think that's going to be the case in the NFL, that worrying about the quarterback position like we have done for most of the last, you know, 20 years. I think it's a little less panic. That's all I'm saying. So we'll see if this prediction holds true in the next couple of years. You know, you'll see more and more of these, you know, cheaper rookie contracts and whatnot, but time will tell on that issue. But that is going to do it for us here on today's Locked On Falcons. Tomorrow, I believe we'll be joined by Josh Kindle of The Athletic. And funnily enough, we had Josh on like the Tuesday kicking off free agency last year, and that was the day where the news dropped that they were pursuing Deshaun Watson. So like I had recorded a full episode with Deshaun Watson, or with Josh Kindle, talking about, oh, the Falcons gonna be quiet this week in free agency. And then 45 minutes later, Deshaun Watson news broke, and I had to scrap that whole episode. So I'm kind of tempting fate to sort of see if we can have Josh on, and then, you know, we'll see if a big move happens in that regard with the Falcons shortly thereafter. So that will be what you can expect on tomorrow's episode. Please make us your first listen. For your second listen, go and check out Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. Damian Parson, Keith Sanchez of the Draft Network are providing that in-depth coverage of the top prospects, the deep dives into the sleepers, hidden gems for your favorite team's fortunes. Even if you're not necessarily loving the moves that the Falcons are making right now, Locked On NFL Draft on YouTube, you know, check them out. Find them wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.